on the Republican National Convention. We're certainly getting lots of responses on our website. Noria, listening from Barcelona, says it's really weird that private issues are such importance in the U.S. To be honest, I don't know how many children the president of Spain has, and I've voted for him. Regarding pregnancies, the Spanish Minister of Defense, a woman, was appointed minister at her 7th month of pregnancy, and she was out of work for a couple of months after giving birth. I think the U.S. has made a great progress regarding a woman's presence in the political sphere, but I think there is a long way to go to equal European countries. Well, there's a thought. Let's hear yours at 8778-MYTAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
Unfortunately, our candidates are not running for office in Spain, where people don't pay so much attention to these issues. The issue of childcare and presidential candidate children is actually on the minds of people in St. Paul. And it was our smart idea to send our friend and Freakonomics author Stephen Dubner out to St. Paul to take a look at the issues as they are playing out there. He's part of our live convention team in St. Paul. And Sarah Palin, the vice presidential hopeful, John McCain's running mate, is set to speak tonight. And whatever she says on the minds of the people in the audience will be her children, and particularly Bristol, her pregnant 17-year-old daughter. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Hello. Do you mind if I call you Ocho Cinco Hockenberry just for
call
the rest of the hour, at least?
Call me Ocho, yeah. Or Ocho Oach. Berry. You can call me Ocho Berry. That's good.
Ocho Berry's good. My 8-year-old son, by the way, wants to be called Ocho Cinco now. He's a big football fan.
Really? Oh, that's great.
I think it's got a ring to it. Ocho Cinco Dubner.
Definitely.
Ocho Cinco Dubnero.
Well, let's pose the question right at the top. Are children historically a liability for high-profile parents, particularly political parents?
I love the question. The problem is to come up with a real answer is very hard because we have a small sample set, right? I mean, I guess if you worked really hard, you look at every major candidate of every race for the last 30 or 40 years, you could figure it out. But it's not a very big sample set, and there's a lot of anomalies. I will say this. They're obviously a big wild card. If you're a candidate and you've got a kid past the age of 12 or so, it's a big wild card to say the least. It's hard to imagine that Andrew Giuliani's pronounced virtual estrangement from his dad helped Rudolph Giuliani's campaign this past year. The Bush twins were some trouble. The Chip Carter, much more so, years and years ago. On the other hand, you know, it seems as if the children are model citizens, as the Gore daughters seem to be during that campaign, as the Kerry daughters seem to be. It doesn't really gain you that much. So it's hard to say empirically, yes, they're a political liability, or no, they're not. But we're in a situation right now with Bristol Palin where the big question is this daughter a political liability? If so, how?
Well, what about the question of her experience? She's pregnant. She's going to get married to her 17-year-old boyfriend, her high school sweetheart, presumably. What the prognosis for a teen who decides to become a mother? I mean, that's some Freakonomics right there.
You know, it is. On the one hand, it's a really interesting question. On the one hand, you could say, you know, people hear the phrase teen pregnancy and they flip, right? So I could counter that and just come from a different angle entirely and say, so what? You know, is it maybe totally elitist or classist or ageist to suggest that teen pregnancy in and of itself is bad? After all, teen pregnancy doesn't necessarily mean unwed mother. It may, but it doesn't necessarily, right? And also, you have to think about the biological and evolutionary drivers for teens to get pregnant. In other words, there was a strong, let's say, supply issue at play, which is women didn't live as long, nor did men, long ago, as our species was evolving, and fertility was really important, and it happened early, okay? So maybe all of these reasons are reasons to say, hey, let's all shut up about teen pregnancy being a scourge on humanity,
but at least
on our society.
But we're talking about today, when you do statistically, and obviously it changes from person to person, but statistically you're less likely to get an education, finish high school or college. You're more likely to have a baby that's born premature or low birth rate, which can signify some other health problems. You're
right,
much more likely to be living in to grow up, to live, to be brought into poverty and to grow up in poverty. And those numbers are all overwhelming.
Right. That was the second hand of my argument, right? So every argument based in economics has to begin on the one hand. On the other hand, and as Harry Truman helpfully pointed out, you know, there's a third hand as well, which is why you need three-handed economists. So, yes, you could say maybe we should shut up about teen pregnancy. On the other hand, the empirical evidence shows that teen pregnancy in our society is not very good for the reasons that you named and many more. So So babies who are born to young mothers tend to be lower birth weight often. They also tend much more likely for ADHD, the less likely to graduate from high school. Teen moms, less likely to attend or complete college. Marriages much more likely to end in divorce, and on and on and on in this society. So you could say that there's an awful lot of reasons why we should be treating teen pregnancy as something to be prevented.
Well, so you're roaming the halls there. You're hanging out with the delegates. Do you think Sarah Palin, in her speech tonight, is going to deliver a cautionary note about the experience of her daughter, Bristol? Or is it going to be more of a, hey, this is our life. We're doing it. Cheer us on here.
Yeah, I would be shocked at the former. I would be not surprised at the latter. We just saw her kind of warming up on the stage. It's about a little bit before 7 o'clock local time here, and she was out fully coiffed and ready to go and looking extraordinarily poised as a bunch of cameras rolled, getting video of her saying nothing other than looking out at where the teleprompters were. Yeah, I think we've already seen the way the issue is going to play out. I would just say this, getting away from Bristol Palin for a moment, you know, The percentage of girls who've had sex by the age of 17 in this country has fallen significantly in the last 8-10 years, okay?
Wow.
If you look at it from a kind of incentive standpoint or a cost standpoint, you know, I like to talk about what price means. We tend to think of price as a dollar term, but it's not just that. Everything has a price, and it's not just dollars. The cost of sexual intercourse is pretty high. There's pregnancy, there's STDs, and so on. When there's a substitute available that is cheaper, you'll see people embrace it. That's what a market is about, right? In this case, the substitute is oral sex, right? So when we see the numbers about how oral sex has spiked in America, one of the big reasons is that intercourse has gotten more costly. It's always been costly, but now there's a substitute that is seen as A, much cheaper, and B, less socially horrific, I guess you'd say.
Freakonomics. That's why we call it Freakonomics here at The Takeaway. Stephen Dubner, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Oral sex, cheaper than intercourse. Yes, one of the lessons that you can take away from this morning's show. Stephen Dubner, Takeaway Convention correspondent. He's with us for the rest of the week, author of the Freakonomics book and blog. I did not know that.
And if you want more of The Takeaway, you can catch up with us online at our website and on Facebook, Twitter, FriendFeed.
And we're following how you really vet a vice presidential candidate, the latest from the Republican National Convention, and what's in a name?
What's in a name? Stephen Dubner gave you one possible takeaway. Here's another for today.
As far as Russia is concerned, America is trying to get a foothold in Russia's backyard.
That was BBC's Moscow correspondent, Stephen Rosenberg, talking about Russia's response to Dick Cheney's visit.
Go on our website. We've got another update in our Patchwork Nation series. This time we're focusing on issues of race and educational equality in the South. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org, the Rockefeller Foundation and its campaign for American workers. More at rockfound.org, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is The Takeaway.